You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 557 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing all right.
Welcome home.
Thank you. Did you guys have a good weekend so far?
So far, so good.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in Boston for sailing?
Not sailing, rowing.
Rowing.
Yeah. Head of the Charles Regatta is one of the largest head races in the world, I think. But it's like 2 days nonstop, great hours of just people racing up and down the river.
Wow. Was it good weather for it?
It was spectacular weather yesterday. Dead calm winds, which is always a win. It's interesting. It's as a course goes, it's got a bunch of curves in it and a bunch of bridges, like five or six bridges across the 4,800 meters. And bridges come with challenges, like, you know, there's the arches that you have to get under, and they space the boats starting every 10 or 15 seconds or something like that. So, like, there's enough room that you can just sort of go under them. But if you're passing someone and you happen to be making the pass under a bridge or, like, cutting a line and trying to make a curve as you're making the pass, it gets real hard real fast. And so part of the fun as a spectator is watching those curves happen, those, you know, people cutting into each other. We saw one where two boats didn't actually collide, but were pretty close to the point that one had to stop rowing fully.
Wow.
Like their oars were meshed between each other, lined up. It was as close as some years they do crash into each other. So that was pretty cool. Saw a course record get set.
Wow.
Which is always neat. Also, super bizarre situation. I bring my camera and my big lens out. I take pictures of, you know, random people rowing because it's cool. Was standing next to someone on one of the bridges, and they're like, oh, we're cheering for this person. Who are you cheering for? You just start talking, making friends. Like, oh, okay. So I take a picture of the person they were cheering for because, you know, I have a nice camera and it's good to get a good shot of them. And I show them the picture. I'm like, do you want this? I can send it to you so you can send it to your friend. They're like, that's wonderful. So we text, whatever. It turns out that one of the other rowers in the boat, the one directly in front of him, the person who I was trying to get the picture of, I have a photo of him missing a stroke. Like, not actually rowing, which is not something one does in a race. We sort of saw it happen at the time, like a bunch of us standing around like, oh, that guy missed a stroke. Why are only seven people rowing? This and that. And then sent the photo to her, to send on to her friend. And the guy wrote back, and the two of them sort of figured out the guy who I got the photo of missing a stroke was actually in the midst of, arterial fibrillation. Like, was just shy of having a heart attack. And I have a photo of it happening.
Wow.
So that sort of freaked me out.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know if he was okay?
He is okay. But like shortly after that happened, we saw an ambulance. They pulled out of the race. That boat pulled over and like pulled the guy off the boat and put him in an ambulance.
Wow.
And I have a photo of it happening, sort of. It's super weird.
I mean, this is why they keep ambulances at these types of events, right?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I especially head of the Charles. This is the 60th year they've done it, 6-0. So they've had some practice, but massive crowds. Expertly managed, really very, very well done. And like ambulances all up and down the course, sort of at each bridge, ready to go. Boats on the water to work as sort of officials. If they need to get up to next to one of the rigs, mm-hmm. they can. It's pretty well done.
Nice. Nice. I'm glad it was a good weekend.
Yeah. You?
It's been a little bit rainy here. So just, yeah, rain suits and playgrounds. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
Put a glass on the Civil War.
It keeps the helicopter grounded, which is nice because that's all we've been hearing for the last 3 weeks. So, yeah. Let's talk about United. There was a flight from Denver to LAX that ended up diverting to Salt Lake City, and it had windscreen damage. It's still unclear what actually caused the damage, but it was bad enough that it injured the pilot.
Yeah, it looks like something shattered and cracked the screen inside somehow.
Yes.
The
pictures are fairly wild.
Super cool.
Some people are saying space debris. That's not confirmed. Other people are saying it could have been a really big hail storm. I don't know. For something to cause that much damage, it had to have been something semi-heavy, I think, to crack the windscreen the way it did.
Yeah.
So someone even suggested
the engine rep playing 500 miles an hour. So like,
that's true.
Right. It's not quite like dust in space that can do it because you're traveling 17,000 miles an hour, but it doesn't have to be that heavy for there to be precipitous damage given the speeds.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting comments I saw was from a pilot who said this could actually be like a lightning strike that hit at just the right place.
Interesting.
Because he was like, there's a slight burn marks or what look like singe marks on the outside of the airplane, which he,
yeah,
you know, okay. No one knows for sure. So I'm interested to hear what the final verdict is on that. But
I mean, are we going to get a final verdict?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they didn't see it coming, whatever it was.
Sure.
So, and then I think just keeping on the United front, Scott Kirby was quoted as saying he spends a lot of time in economy on his planes. I think the comment was something like, yeah, you know, the kids are seated back there. I have to go back and help, which the way I read that is you're sitting in first class and you guys like swap seats.
I was going to say, I mean, the seats in the back of the private jet are also economy class, right?
That's true. It's very true.
Harsh, but fair. That's an interesting turn of phrase, the way if you put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So I don't see him flying coach. Isn't he positive space F pretty much guaranteed as part of his contract?
I would assume so. I mean, that said, over the years, various CEOs have said, understand that I can book that, but we, you know.
I'll take it over.
I'll take economy so that the elites get their upgrades or we can sell the seats or someone else gets it or whatever. So,
this is United, so no one's getting the upgrade. Let's be clear. Like,
tens of dollars sale. He wants to make sure he gets that extra little bit of revenue.
Yeah.
It is certainly a different era. I'm not seeing the singe marks. Not going to lie. I'm seeing scuff marks, but.
Is that what you chalk it up to scuff? Okay. That's fine.
I don't know. I mean, it's one photo, so who the hell knows, but it definitely did hit right at that corner, the sort of top corner, central corner of that windscreen, which, and like the metal peeled back a little.
Yeah. It's super bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm glad they were able to put it on the ground. I mean, he was injured.
Yeah.
Cause he was hit.
One photo of the guy's arm, with blood marks on it. So,
yeah. Let's talk about Southwest.
I just out of curiosity, did you find the live ATC of it? Did you hear the call?
I haven't heard it.
Yeah. I may need to go dig that up. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone's posted it. So yeah, you should.
Yeah. Get myself
I wonder, I mean, cause they diverted to Salt Lake City. I wonder if they were over Salt Lake Center when it happened coming from Denver. I mean, that's, I don't know. I would have thought they would have gone further south, but.
I mean, it's a pretty, you're relatively north making that trip. The path shows it happening.
Kind of over Salt Lake and then going down.
Yeah. I mean, they're Denver and Salt Lake. Salt Lake is not very far north of Denver.
Yeah.
It's mostly due west. And so the path has them a little south, but they're probably still in the Salt Lake ATC.
So that'd be the one I'd look for then.
Yeah. Because I'm prepared enough to do that instead of taking a nap this afternoon.
It is, it's extremely painful to hunt through that audio. Yeah, maybe they should use AI.
All right, folks. Well, thanks for joining us on this week's episode. I want you to hang up now so I can go whoop Steven's ass.
So let's talk about Southwest. They're having a big revenue push right now.
Yeah.
And this is after they kind of sold out, I guess is the way to put it.
They're doing many things to try to increase revenue in many different ways. Sure, we'll go with that. I don't know. Sold out is maybe not the term I'd use, but
yeah.
This one is, they've signed a deal with a company called Volantio, something like that. Which, to your mocking me, or in trying to enrage me, baiting me, that's the word, bills itself as an AI company, but they've been around far longer than AI as we know it today has. So that's always exciting to see companies pivot to grab that branding. They do, post ticket sale revenue improvements, enhancements. And so basically they run an add-on in the airline booking system that checks for flights that have sold more than were expected.
Okay.
And says, oh, we, you know, basically helps airlines identify this flight actually is in high demand and we didn't realize it when we started. So we sold X number of seats at a super discounted fare in advance. What if we try to give those passengers, you know, some frequent flyer points or a travel credit or some other quote unquote personalized targeted gift to get them to switch off that flight and give us that seat back because, you know, they may have paid $59 for it, but now we can sell it for $159. So if we give them a $50 travel credit, like everybody wins. And so it's basically trying to create VDBs, voluntary bumps in advance of getting to the airport.
This is like Alaska's thing where they send you the email. your flight might be overbooked. Would you like to take $25 to take a different flight?
It's like, exactly the same thing. It's actually the same company.
And I'm like, no, I'll take the $1,600 at the airport. Thanks.
Sure. Right. And so it's a little bit of game theory, and you get for some passengers, right? Sometimes if someone booked the cheap flight and they wanted the different one. And so now if they can switch to that other one for free, it's actually a win in their case because it was mispriced earlier. Sometimes it's, you know, beneficial just to the passenger. Like, actually, I was flexible and I know this happened before I got to the airport. So I'm in wherever and I can spend an extra 2 hours at the hotel or at the beach or whatever before going to the airport rather than being frustrated sitting at the airport. Like, there is that exhilaration of getting the bump in the credit while you're at the airport. And it typically would be a higher number because there is that aspect of it, right? The demand profile shifts. But if everybody can arrange everything in advance, like, a different person probably takes it than the person at the airport, to your point, and it's at a lower dollar amount, but the person taking it is arguably happier.
Yeah.
Or as, can call ahead and tell someone I'm going to be late, you know, stick around, I can't pick up the dog till later, or I need to go grocery shopping, or whatever the it is.
Yeah, I mean, part of this, like, says to me, revenue management is still not great. Like, the ability to do revenue management is still like one of those areas of airlines that suffer, or that they just haven't perfected. Because this is, you know, fixing a problem after it's happened.
Revenue management is half science, half black magic, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've always said that. So,
and I, but interesting about it is I don't think that will ever change, right? There's always some weird or unique or different or unexpected demand bit that shifts. Why did that flight become busy this week? We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, random company has a business deal and they got to send 4 people and like that threw the market off.
Yeah. How long has this company been around?
Just doing, I guess, a long time. It was them and one other, and I can't remember who the other one is now, which is awkward because that was the one I knew the people who are running, and like the two of them were basically competing to try to grab market share, and the other one lost. So,
wow. Okay.
But like, I would say a decade at least.
Okay.
It's
an interesting space for sure.
Yeah. And it's right. It's, they tie into the PSS platform, the back end, and run all these queries and find these things and then like find the right passenger to try to send the offer to and help generate the offer. It's pretty interesting data science for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And on top of this, Southwest is also installing Recaro seats in the first plane with it entered service.
Yep. New deliveries of Max planes as of very recently. Will have the Recaros. They're not retrofitting existing.
Okay.
So I think their Collins Meridian is their legacy platform. But the new ones, are the Recaros. When they did their media day just over a year ago of this is what the new cabin layout is going to look like when they showed off what extra legroom would be. They hastily installed the Recaro seats on that, some demo seats on that plane, but it wasn't for real. You know, I sat in them for like 15 minutes, but it's a mid-range line Recaro seat. It's not their most bare bones sort of ultra basic economy one.
That's the question I was going to ask, is how uncomfortable is
it's their midline. It's their midline economy product. It's not the long haul economy that's extra comfort, and it's not the no line padding super basic. It's a mid-range version.
I mean, did you find it okay?
For 15 minutes, anything's okay.
Yeah. I mean,
yes, I did.
Smartass.
It's yes, I am. It's the R2, and so they sort of have like a 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Now are the product lines for economy. R1 being the most basic, R3 being the long haul comfort. But it's a reasonable seat. It's
and for listeners, the tail number is November 8972 Sierra. If you're
wondering,
the back of the plane.
Basically, from that tail and everything newer being delivered will be Recaro for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
But not retrofits.
No. Yeah, the non-retrofits, I mean, I kind of get it, save some cash. Maybe when they go in for C-checks, maybe?
Yeah.
Or depending on how beat up they are, maybe they get pulled out. I don't know.
Yeah, it is basically that. There's no need to do it, and so they'll wait until they have to.
Yeah.
Swap them.
And then United had its first mainline plane with Starlink fly around.
Yeah, 737-800. And entered service last week on Wednesday on a flight from Newark to Houston. Then went to Fort Lauderdale and back to Houston.
Okay.
It's, you know, they, United made a big deal out of being the first to do a live TV interview on their plane. And they did Today's show on Tuesday morning with Kirby broadcasting live over Starlink. It is decidedly not the first time live TV has happened from an airplane. I don't even think it's the first time it's happened on Starlink. It is the first time, I'm sure, for the Today Show, but, you know, we grab for things where we can. In this
yeah.
Yeah, that's coming. They're saying they're going to do 15 a month.
So we got like 4 years till we get everything done?
What are we? Oh, sorry, 15 7/3/8.
Oh, okay. All right.
On top of half the regional jets are done. I believe a 7/3/9 is in for fitting now for its STC. So it's they sort of got to go incrementally through all of them and get it done. I believe the plan is end of 27 to be done.
Okay.
Or by 27. There's a hard push to move quickly on this transition.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, I flew San Francisco Taipei with Foz. Well, Foz is the day behind me, but that was borderline unusable for most of the flight.
Sure.
On United. And then on Doha to San Francisco, it didn't really work until, and I understood like over Iran and Russia, it probably wouldn't work, but like it didn't actually work till maybe north of Yellowknife. I think.
What aircraft was that?
It's a 351,000.
From Qatar?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which we were trying to figure out which product that was.
Yeah. I don't think that's Starlink.
No, it's not. They only have it on the 772s.
They have some 350s also, but I think it's only 900 so far.
Okay.
I think those have started to install. Maybe it's only Air France that started their 350. No, Qatar has said they've started their 350 installs. Air France definitely has. Yeah, it's a, depending on who it is. So if you're on, if it didn't work over Russia and Iran, I mean, I think that's probably the Inmarsat GM system.
That's what we thought, but we weren't sure.
Yeah. Next time do an IP address look up and get your, if you know your public IP address, you can find out who's registered with Aaron and then figure it out.
Yeah, I couldn't even get anything to load. So,
well, that's a fair point. Sometimes on the capture page at the bottom, it'll have a copyright also who owns the portal.
Gotcha. It was disappointing. I mean, so it's good to hear United's making strides.
Yeah.
And then Virgin Atlantic also has an install plan for the 787s.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things about the big Starlink push sort of writ large is, a bunch of airlines have 787s that are committed to them. So United is one, Virgin Atlantic is one, Air France is one, Qatar is one. Alaska is one with the Hawaiian 787s. So there's a few airlines all pushing in that direction. Putting new hardware on a 787 is, we'll say not for the faint of heart, it's not an easy deal. Boeing won't let you, right? Boeing won't. For many aircraft, you just say, oh, it's the aluminum, we know how to do it. We put structural backers or doublers up, and we make sure the plane doesn't fall apart. With the carbon fiber, Boeing is much, much more conservative about who they'll let do it and how that comes to play. Hmm. And so figuring out how they're going to do that with the Starlink hardware has been a big question mark since all of these airlines started announcing it. Back in April or May, whenever I was in Hamburg this year, I think it was April finally again, Boeing's global services group was talking about this aero shroud or aerodynamic shroud product that would be a common mount platform that would work on the 787s for multiple ESAs, the electronically steered array antennas, the flat panel. That they would basically create a frame that with the mounting plate that goes onto the aircraft and the right lug bolts and the hole for mount for wiring to come through, and then they create sort of a shroud, a surround that sits around the antenna itself, and then they would publish the specs on that, and the other vendors would take those specs and figure out how to make their antenna fit inside that space, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And a bunch of the ESA vendors are now moving in that direction because they all want to get their hardware on these 787s. At the time, actually, then Intelsat, now SES, was talking about it a lot for their ESA model as well, which is the one that American is putting on its regional jets, Air Canada as well. Hmm. And that'll be on some mainline planes as well. And so, but Starlink was one of the options at that time too. And so this deal with Boeing, basically it's, Boeing Global Services is doing the work.
Okay.
So it's not just an STC that anybody can go do. Right now, it seems you have to license it through Boeing, but it's happening. And so it's a big deal that this is moving forward. One of the really big deals about it is it uses the same mounting plate as a regular legacy design antenna.
Okay.
so you don't have to drill new holes. So like a Virgin Atlantic that has Panasonic on board in this Boeing mount kit today can sort of leave that plate, the adapter plate mounted to the aircraft, pull the antenna and the sort of innards and the radome off, put this new shroud and antenna on and not have to drill new holes.
That was a big deal. Yeah, it's much, but it's faster than...
Faster, it's cheaper, it's structurally safer. I laugh a lot because one of the first Rho 44, which is now Anuvu through some cycles, they did Southwest way back in the day. And like one of their first installs was basically, you know, 10,000 rivets. I mean, not entirely, but when they took that hardware off and did a lease return, the lessor was like, you'd get that, you know, that heavy shit off the top of our plane. And they're like, yep, of course, it didn't arrive with that. We'll take it off if you don't want it. But they basically had to get a new sheet of aluminum and like replace a giant piece of the fuselage because the old piece had so many rivet holes in it.
Well, that's reassuring.
But we've moved well past that.
And then Indigo has firmed up its A350 order. I actually completely forgot that they were ordering A350s, but now I remember.
Yeah, that's right. So they've got their 787 wet leases from Norse, I believe, right now.
Yep.
That they're flying to the UK. Actually, I guess it's by the time this comes out next week, next weekend, or the weekend after this comes out, I believe should be IATA season change. So that'll be their first flights. Into the UK, I believe. It's definitely for the season, not with these 787s, but yeah, they'll have that happen. But they want to get 350s for themselves. And so they had a firm order for 30. Over the summer, they announced back in June, another 30 via MOU. That 30 has firmed up. So now it's 60 firm. And, you know, over time, I think it runs for like six or seven years, maybe order timeline, but like that's still a lot of planes, 10 a year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other interesting order news, True Nord is a lessor that specializes in regional jets and regional aircraft. They did some props also. Placed an order with Embraer for 20 E195 E2s, which are the big ones. Mm-hmm. It's their first direct order from a manufacturer rather than buying used planes and leasing them back out. And then they also added another 20 options on the 195 E2. And interestingly, 10 options on the 175s, the E1, the original, like... Oh. The U.S. airline regional jet.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Or North American regional jet. Canada's got some, too. So that the fact that, you know, that E2 is never going to happen because it's too heavy for scope clause, and U.S. carriers still continue to need these 70-seat jets.
I wonder if their 20 jets that they ordered have to do with the thing that Foz and I were talking about last week with the 220s and some of the issues the airlines are facing with those.
I mean, that's engine issues, right?
Engine issues, yeah.
I mean,
Iraqi Airways is grounded theirs. I think the latest one that we saw was, what's the name of that airline? It's a weird name. Crap. No, it's,
well, Egypt Air got rid of theirs.
Egypt Air is getting rid of theirs.
They sold them to Breeze.
I mean, how's Breeze doing with that? Are they don't have
Breeze
any issues?
Well, it seems. I mean, I think they have, maybe because theirs are newer and so they haven't hit the grounding period yet.
Mm.
But I think they're doing, and then obviously the newer engines being delivered I think we're finally to they're making planes with engines that don't need to be immediately grounded.
Okay.
I thought so. I think Breeze is gonna struggle some and isn't expanding quite as fast as it wanted, but it's there.
Yeah. It's the, let me see, I'm gonna find it here. I'm gonna find it.
Yeah.
I don't, it's the E2. I'm looking at the wrong thing. A220, sorry.
There was something else last week that I wanted to see if you guys talked about. Now you don't remember it, so. It's not like Sriwijaya, whatever, out of Indonesia, is it?
No, it was a European carrier, and they had an interesting, it's a weird name. Air Austral, that's what it is, the French carrier.
Ah.
They basically said they're grounding them.
Yeah.
So I'm interested, like, you know, Widerøe has them, Air Baltic has them, but we're not seeing the same struggles.
Widerøe has A220s?
I thought they did. Or maybe they have
E-jets and
they have E-jets. Yeah, the E2s. Yeah, so that's why they don't have an issue.
Yeah, props. Air Baltic, I think, has had some grounded. That has been an issue for them.
Okay.
But they still have enough to give them to Lifty Group, so.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Buying 20 E2s, where are you going to lease them out? Like you said, they're not going to go to the U.S. True Nord is mostly European, right?
I think most of their less seas are in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it could be anybody, really.
So, yeah. That's the nice thing about being a lessor is the planes are easily portable.
Yep. And then American got a 100-year anniversary livery.
Yeah, it's a throwback to its DC-3, I think.
Yep.
Design. The renderings they put out, a shout out to John Walton for noticing that they had a pennant flag on them and it was flying backwards. Like into the wind instead of with the wind.
Yes.
Oopsie. And then they fixed it, which is funny to me mostly because I would have thought whatever they were showing would, well, I guess a rendering is a rendering, so fine, but like I hope they didn't have to repaint the plane.
Hey guys, we missed this.
Yeah, we're gonna need a quick redo, thanks.
So did they fix the video too?
They did change the video.
Okay. I was like, okay, now it looks right to me. But
yeah.
It looks nice. It's gonna be on a 77W.
Yeah.
Which is, that's big. I mean, I'm impressed because
there's a lot of white space involved in that delivery.
Yes, but they usually, you know, a lot of these airlines, they do these special liveries on like 737s or something that it's, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was John Ostrow or someone else made the comment that like, if they're not going to do it as a bare metal, why are we even bothering? because the 777 could still be bare metal and the DC-3 was, but they did in fact do white paint. I imagine part of it has to do with like, the swappable component parts, the nose and the engine nacelles and whatever that won't be bare.
Yeah.
And it's hard to keep those. You don't want to have the true mismatch.
You don't want the United look, which is different nose, different engine nacelles.
Yeah.
Know, yeah. It's actually, I was telling Foz this the other day, I saw at San Francisco a 738 that had the bare metal livery from American.
They do have a retrojet. Yes.
They do. Okay.
One of their retrojets.
Gotcha.
Is it bare metal or is it painted silver though? I forget.
No, it's bare.
Or metal. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do. And it's a 7.3 where most of their retro liveries are 320 family, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reason for that, but yeah.
Yeah. And then Boeing production increases. What's the news there?
Yeah. Speaking of John Ostrower from just before, the FAA has cleared Boeing to increase to 42 aircraft per month.
Hmm.
So, we've been waiting for this to happen. We've been hearing about it maybe happening. It did require Boeing to sort of get through a lot of different challenges. There was the strike. There was the door blowout with Alaska. There's been a lot of questions, but we're moving forward.
That's good.
So moving from 38 to 42 definitely helps, considering that they were that Airbus has now surpassed them as most delivered single aisle plane or any plane of all time. Certainly, I think Boeing would like to catch back up, but.
Wow. That's good. I mean, it's good to hear that Boeing's picking up the pace a little bit. And
just hope that they actually are getting them done right.
Yeah, no comment. Oh.
A lot of comments.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I really wish I could remember what the other thing I wanted to ask you guys about last week was, but I don't remember by the end of the bonus topics.
I think I mentioned it to Foz. We were so delirious after we landed both times. Yeah. But we had there was a lady seated in front of me, which it's kind of weird to say because I was facing backwards.
Yeah.
So she was really seated behind me, but she was in the row in front of me.
Yeah.
That was having, I think, an anxiety attack.
Fun.
And was claiming it was a medical problem. And so I thought she started saying this as we were entering Iranian airspace and then continued into Russian airspace. I'm like, can we just...
Excellent diversion points there.
Yeah, I was like, can we just, I don't know, let's get over, the North Pole, and then we'll figure it out. How about that?
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of diversion opportunities.
Yes. We go back to Finland or something. I don't know. That made me a little nervous, so...
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right. Well, for our Patreon subscribers, we've got something called Sardine Class. I'm interested to hear what that's about. Some Mosaic updates. Big BA... capacity increases at some destinations that they have, some 777 partner fraud allegations, and United with Instacart. We're going to talk about that a little bit. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon supporter. If not, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.